From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. It was bound to happen. It always happens in large institutions. You have employees who grow concerned or disaffected, and they leak internal documents. And now it's happening to the LDS Church. A few months ago, in various platforms, these documents and a few videos started appearing. So far, nothing illegal exposed or even incriminating, but what did come out is the revelation that the church is a big bureaucracy run by human beings. They get paid, they get briefed. Big deal, right? Well, the scholar Rick Phillips says it is kind of a big deal for some Latter-day Saints to have the curtain pulled back on the inner workings of their church to show the process isn't as mystical as some might think or hope. Phillips says it's hard to live up to that billing. Today in the program, we're talking about the so-called Mormon leaks, what they reveal, and what that means after the news.
Love what you hear? Radio West podcast is made possible in part by thousands of KUER sustainers, along with Albion Financial Group, wealth advisors since 1982. Albion values local organizations helping to enrich the community through the power of ideas. Find out more online at albionfinancial.com.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. People leak documents for all kinds of reasons. Sometimes they're looking for revenge. Sometimes they're looking to expose wrongdoing. And they aren't always looking to destroy the institution. Sometimes they just want to change it. Whatever the motives, Ryan McKnight is providing a platform for Mormons to leak documents from within the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Last month, McKnight launched a website where he offers Mormon insiders a forum and confidentiality to share documents. So far, there have been revelations about how much high-ranking Mormon leaders get paid. That came from a leak of a pay stub, which is significant because the official position of the church is that it's a lay ministry and that leaders only get modest living expense stipends. There were some videos leaked showing leaders talking with scholars and political leaders about their concerns over the legalization of marijuana, their fight over same-sex marriage. This is where one leader referred to the so-called gay agenda. More than anything, it seems the documents reveal the ordinary business of running a big and influential institution. So today in the program, we're talking about these leaked documents, what they reveal about the LDS Church. I should also point out we reached out to the LDS Church for comment on the program. They declined. The church has said in the past they won't confirm the authenticity of the various leaked documents, and they've offered some particular responses to some of the others, but they didn't want to comment on the program today. Joining us first is Ryan McKnight. He's founder of Mormon Leaks. He himself is a former Latter-day Saint, lives in Las Vegas, is joining us from Nevada Public Radio. And Ryan McKnight, welcome to you. Thanks very much for doing this.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I guess I want to begin with how it is you got this job. How did this come to you?
I kind of fell into it backwards, like many jobs that we all come across in our lives. But I guess the short story is that I played a role, a small role, in the leak of what has been termed the November policy back in November of 2015. And my name was not in the newspaper or in the media involved in that leak. However, it was known in certain online forums that I had played a role in that. And so I started to get people that would contact me, not a lot, but, you know, once a month I'd get a contact from somebody claiming to have something. A lot of times nothing came to fruition. I'd get a few things here and there. I'd post it, nothing really newsworthy, until in October I received a contact from somebody with these videos, and they told me that they had some videos they'd been sitting on for several years, had been looking for a way to get them out there, and they felt that maybe I was in a position to help them with that. Yeah. And so I did. And that kind of put my name sort of on a wider stage, definitely in Utah and even nationally. It garnered some national press, those videos.
Yeah.
And the floodgates opened.
Right.
I was bombarded with people contacting me. And I realized very quickly that there was going to be a need. If I was going to I basically had to make a decision that either I had made a mistake for getting involved in this, or I was going to have to embrace it 100%. I wasn't going to be able to like just sort of haphazardly try to do this sort of on the side or whatever. So I decided to jump in at first, put together a team with the goal of putting together this website that is now up, and they can essentially, basically the goal is to be able to provide people with complete anonymity and protect their anonymity in revealing, leaking, or giving us whatever documents that they feel are relevant to our mission.
You've talked about how sometimes people come across information that makes them feel uneasy, or mm-hmm. They're troubled by it. And I'm wondering, I wanted to ask you about that. What, and you said that some people, church members deserve to know some of this stuff. What is it that you figure church members deserve to know?
Well, I think at the top of that list, I would put finances, and I would put corporate policies and procedures. I think those are the main two issues that I believe the church has an ethical obligation, although they may not have a legal obligation right now, but they do, I believe, have an ethical obligation to disclose that to their constituents, which in this case would be the tithe payers.
So your sense of it now is that keeping this information from everyone else isn't illegal, it's just unethical or just kind of patronizing. Is that where you are right
yeah.
now?
Well, basically, I mean, you know, religion is maybe the last sacred cow in this country, right? And so religions have wide-sweeping exemptions when it comes to laws related to disclosure of things like financials and whatnot. But that doesn't stop religions from disclosing their financials. In fact, many religions do disclose their financial dealings with their respective membership. And many choose not to for whatever reason. Yeah, the church does have a responsibility to do that, and that doesn't have to be a bad thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think some people, the knee-jerk reaction is to say, well, you just want them to show their financials because you want to hurt the church. Well, I mean, I don't know what the financials are, so I don't know if their financials hurt them or help them. I have no idea. But financials, by their very nature, are not a negative thing. They just are what they are.
Right.
And I think when you are asking people to support you financially, and you put yourself on a pedestal of sort of, you know, hey, we are your pathway to some sort of divine reward down the road. We provide you with the best framework to live your life. And on top of that, you have to, you know, have to, or we ask you to, depending on how you want to frame it, support us monetarily. I think that people who decide to do that deserve to have a full set of facts in front of them before they make that decision.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that you can't make the decision to support the Mormon Church. Millions do, and millions always will. So, but they just have to make they have to make that decision in an informed manner.
Right. So it's transparency that you.
I mean, you touched in the introduction there about, you know, the pay stubs maybe challenging people's idea of a modest stipend, which has always been sort of the trope that for years. And so I think you know, I don't want to make a decision or offer an opinion as to whether or not the figures that have been revealed is a modest stipend.
Right.
But I think that the people who are supporting the church or thinking about supporting the church should be able to make that determination. So if they look at the numbers and they say, yes, I agree, it's a modest stipend, I will choose to continue to support. Or they might say, you know, it's not modest, we'd like to maybe petition for change, or mm-hmm. they'd like to, whatever action, whatever conclusion they want to come to.
You left Mormonism 3 years ago or so. And mm-hmm. We don't need to get into why necessarily, but I did wonder, was part of your disaffection with Mormonism at all related to this idea of transparency?
Not initially. Huh. Although I have been always a person who's been is passionate about transparency, especially with financially related things. I'm an accountant in my personal life, and you know, it's always something that revolved around my life. But when it came to the church, when I was an active member, to be perfectly honest with you, it wasn't something that I ever thought about one way or the other. Yeah. And I think that's probably common for many members. However, as soon as I did sit down to think about the lack of transparency and what I wish I would have known as a member, then I definitely did change. But as far as being the impetus for me leaving the church, I would say no. It would be something that I kind of, I would say maybe 6, 7, 8 months down the road, started thinking about and realized that I had maybe, that they had maybe fallen short in that regard.
It's interesting that Laurie Goodstein of the New York Times, in covering this story, Mormon Leaks, she used the word disaffected. She said the leak of videos, for example, is the work of disaffected Mormons. Do you think that's right?
Well, I don't know one way or the other because I don't know who gave those videos to me. Hmm. But I don't think it's unreasonable to assume that it's somebody who is no longer a Mormon, because I think that the videos are probably mostly considered unflattering. But I suppose it was an active Mormon that just wanted people to know how things actually work, that we're tired of hearing about in church, about how everything's done, you know, through prayer and inspiration.
But you don't know. I guess that's an important point, because which kind of gets to, I think, a bigger question, and that is, how does this work? How do you confirm the information, if you do? How do you assure yourself that the person who's leaking is authentic? I mean, how does it work?
Well, we're not commenting right now on the specifics of the authentication process, okay. Because I think it would probably hurt what we're doing if I did. But I'll say this: we do have a process in place to try to authenticate the documents. That is something that's beyond just sort of a gut feeling, right?
Right.
I'm not looking at the document and saying, "Oh, it feels real to me." Right. But it is important to keep in mind that we would probably never be able to offer a 100% guarantee that a document is real. Now, in the case, for everything that we've leaked so far, based on our authentication process, I'm comfortable in saying that I would be extremely shocked to find out any of the documents we've released so far are fake. But I do have something right now that we haven't released yet, that will be released in a couple of weeks, that I'm starting to think that I'm not going to be able to authenticate it. But I still think it is something valuable to leak. I don't really want to get into what it is, but I'll just say this: when we leak it, it will come with a disclaimer that we were not able to authenticate it.
Right.
But I didn't put the disclaimer on anything else because I do feel like I've done enough authentication to say that I'm comfortable that they're real.
Do you take responsibility for the information, or are you just agnostic about this is a platform and take it for what it's worth?
Yeah, I mean, take it for what it's worth. If I would have received...
Here's what I mean, Ryan. Like, you are a newspaper and you choose to publish a document that might have been leaked, you know, the publishing organization, the newspaper, they take a kind of editorial responsibility for the document. I'm guessing you don't see it in the same way, your website.
Well, are you asking me if I will leak anything I receive?
No. I'm saying, do you take responsibility on some level for the document? Because I gather, at least I understand, because I've heard you say, for example, you won't release personal information.
Sure.
I don't know if I would phrase it like that. No, that you perceive as not relevant, I guess, to something, right?
Yes.
So let me ask you this then, on that line. It's no longer a secret that Mormon Church President Thomas Monson suffers from some form of dementia. Mm-hmm. We've talked about it on this program. But there's this argument that if this were just an everyday citizen, that his health condition wouldn't be really anyone's business. And in fact, Monson has made the point himself through intermediaries that he prefers to keep his health a private matter. But he's the leader of a very public institution with a powerful influence. And so is that relevant information? Is that something you deem as personal and you wouldn't have necessarily revealed before?
Sure. Well, it would depend on exactly what was given to me as proof. of his medical condition. But I would say that if I had information that indicated that he clearly was, let's just say, at some level of dementia, just to sort of say something, right? Because we don't know exactly what's going on with him. But I do think it would be important to get that information out simply because I think that it's safe to say that the LDS Church, the members are being led to believe something else. And so I don't necessarily think that the nitty-gritty specifics of his mental condition need to be disclosed or anything like that. But if he's suffering from, you know, the early stages or advanced stages or whatever it is of dementia, I think a simple statement like that, I think that the people deserve to know because they are looking to this person as a leader and they are making claims that he is leading them. And I think that they do deserve to know at least if he's in a capacity to do so. Now, if I received, as an example, a video that somebody took, a cell phone video maybe, of him, you know, in a state of clear dementia where he doesn't even know, you know, he doesn't recognize the people around him or something or whatever the symptoms are, right? I really don't know. It would be very tough for me to release that video, probably. I think the first step that I would take would be to meet with members of the media and show them the video and simply report on what we saw in the video.
Yeah.
And I would probably try to take that route at first. And I would probably want to reserve giving that video to the public unless maybe the church was going to come out and say that we were lying or something like that. So that's probably the approach that I would take. But, you know, again, it would depend on what the exact thing I receive and what it says. And, you know, there's no like matrix that I have where I sit and I say, okay, well, here's where it is on the top bar and on the horizontal. And then, okay, does it say to leak it or not? You know, there's a judgment call here. Yep. So, but that's kind of what my thinking would be.
Right. So how do you respond to the accusation that you, I'm sure, hear all the time that you're an ex-Mormon, therefore you have this axe to grind? What you said is, look, I don't. I'm just interested in transparency. But can I push back on that a little bit? You have made comments before. You've been accused, for example, of being a troll early on, of baiting Mormon Facebook groups, of having a fairly clear point of view, critiquing Mormonism. So how do you respond to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I myself, Ryan McKnight, I am a critic of Mormonism, and I am a critic of the church, and I am not somebody who supports the church or even thinks that it's a worthwhile institution. Right. However, I would encourage people not to fall into the black and white thinking of that just because those are my personal views that all of a sudden, you know, any idea of the importance of transparency is now, you know, out the window. Even though I have come to conclusions that don't favor the church in certain matters, that doesn't mean that transparency is still not important. If I drop dead tomorrow, the church still has an ethical obligation to be transparent to its members. If every single disaffected or bitter or whatever you want to put ex-Mormon drops dead tomorrow and there's no more critics left, the church still has an ethical obligation to be transparent. So that is kind of like, that's basically why when I hear this criticism of, well, you know, you're just a bitter ex-Mormon, I simply say that has absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about here. And, you know, I am not saying that you should take this memo from 2014 as an example, showing that the base living allowance is $120,000 and come to a negative conclusion. I don't care what conclusion you come to. I just want you to know. And then if you say that's reasonable, great. If you say it's not enough, great. I mean, the leaders of the Mormon Church are allowed to make as little or as much as they want. If they made $800,000 a year, it still wouldn't matter as long as they disclose that to the people. And if I had received something that said instead of $120,000, that it said $30,000 a year, I still would have released it. And that would have been a great thing for the church, I think, from a PR standpoint.
Right. Do you think, Ryan, that here's the question. Are these people who are giving you these documents, and maybe even you yourself, although you're not an employee of within the institution. But are these people whistleblowers in the sense that they're what they're doing is, I mean, they have to sign these non-disclosure forms. So they're violating that. I'm not sure what they're doing is technically illegal. Maybe it is. So does that live up to the standard of them being a whistleblower if they're revealing documents that aren't revealing illegal activities, for example? It seems complicated.
Sure. Yeah, it is. And I don't profess to know the specific legal definition of what a whistleblower is. I probably would personally not put them in the category of a whistleblower because in my mind, I mean, I think of a whistleblower as somebody who is uncovering illegal activity or maybe gross unethical activity. And I don't really think that's happened yet. I mean, it could happen. That could happen in the future. But I don't think that what we've seen so far, it would fall under that. So I'm not sure if I would use the term whistleblower, but somebody in the future could be a whistleblower.
I read about this so-called digital flyer. I'm not sure what that is exactly, but that was circulating on Mormon Facebook group pages, which called you an anti-Mormon activist, that you had this intent of hurting the church. And here's the thing. It included a screen grab of your own Facebook page, which included photos of your kids. How are you reacting to that? Are you seeing that as sort of crossing the line in terms of retaliation?
That was something that had nothing to do with Mormon leaks or anything. That had to do with a private Facebook group that I was a member of under my real name, not a fake name. It was a group that kind of was discussing quote unquote deep doctrine issues. Yeah. And I put challenging posts on there. It's been characterized as trolling or whatever, and I suppose it technically was, but I wasn't hiding behind a fake name.
Right.
And I did, the post did garner comments from people that were very, very disturbing to many people, and I posted the screen grabs on the internet. And when they found out what was happening, somebody figured out what was happening, that I wasn't actually an active Mormon. They went and created a fake Facebook page, posted this picture of my family, and then made these comments. And I actually messaged this person who had posted this, and I said, listen, you know, the whole idea of me being this, you know, anti-Mormon, anti-Christ, whatever the verbiage is they were using, I said, I'm fine with that. Like, go for it. I said, and you want to put a picture of me out there? That's great. I said, can you please just use a picture that doesn't have my kids because they have nothing to do with this.
Right. Yeah.
I said, yeah, feel free to attack me, but leave my kids out of it. And they actually wrote back and said that that as far as they were concerned, my kids were fair game or whatever.
Right.
So I think ultimately what happened was a bunch of people, active and ex-Mormon, rallied around this, what happened, and bombarded these Facebook pages where this meme was posted, and the admins all took it down. But anyway, to your question of whether or not that was crossing the line, yeah, I would say so,
yeah.
Because my kids have nothing to do with this.
Right.
Any attack on me is fair game.
Right. So to the question that we're going to be talking about here a little bit later in the program, what difference do whistleblowers or whatever you want to call them, what difference do they make? What difference do you figure you're making, I suppose, by providing a platform to leak these documents? It sounds like you're not entirely sure if it makes any kind of difference as long as there's some kind of transparency. Or mm-hmm. do you think it's making a difference, that it in some way may be, even in incremental ways, reforming the institution of the LDS Church?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it'll ever have any effect on reforming the church, but it, at a minimum, it is starting a conversation, at a minimum. I think if you were to pull up side-by-side all of the different internet articles that are out there and the Facebook posts from the media articles, especially like if you look at the Tribune articles and KSL, the Deseret News article, you're looking at thousands and thousands of comments on both sides of the fence. And I think that that's good to have these conversations that have never been able to be had before, or if they were had before, it was done on suppositions and faulty information. So at a minimum, that is an effect of the website. And where it could go from there as far as reforming, I mean, it's possible, but it would have to be some information that's revealed that enough active members care about it that for something to happen.
Yeah. It's Ryan McKnight, founder of Mormon Leaks. You can find a link on our website, radiowest.org. He joined us from Nevada Public Radio. Ryan, thank you for taking the time.
All right. Thank you.
We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're exploring Mormon Leaks. It's the name of a website which provides this platform for LDS Church employees and insiders to leak private church documents. Nothing all that incriminating or even all that interesting, at least from some people's perspective, has come out yet. But it does reveal the LDS Church to be a big bureaucracy run like a business by leaders who are conservative. The Mormon Leaks founder Ryan McKnight says he's not looking for scandals, just transparency. So we're just exploring what these leaks do reveal about Mormonism. Joining us now on the program is Nate Carlisle, who is justice and safety reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. Earlier this month, he wrote an op-ed about whistleblowers as a way of understanding the context for this LDS document leak. And he's joining us here in the studio. And Nate, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Doug.
So are the people you're interested in whistleblowers, the effect of whistleblowing and how it works, are the people who are leaking these documents to Ryan McKnight, are they whistleblowers technically?
Technically, yes. I mean, I'm not aware that, for example, one criteria of a whistleblower is that what you leak is all that interesting. So if you don't find all this stuff that interesting, well, these people might still qualify. But call them what you want, but mechanically it seems to be the same, whether you think of them as a whistleblower or a leaker or just a thief in some cases. It looks like they're trying to disclose information from a, let's face it, secretive institution, and they are trying to alert people or change behavior in that institution.
Let's talk about some of the characteristics that you've written about in terms of institutions that could be vulnerable to whistleblowers. One of them is opaqueness, the fact that they're secretive, that they keep their internal details to themselves. In that sense, you write about the fact that Mormonism shares these characteristics with like the NSA and the Department of Defense. Secrecy. Talk about that element.
Well, I mean, it's just common sense. The more secrets you have, the more at risk of exposure you are. Probably the two most famous examples now, I guess three most famous examples of whistleblowers and leakers all have to do with the Department of Defense, you know, the Pentagon Papers, Chelsea Manning, and Edward Snowden. And those were three people that were trying to change behavior some ways of a secretive institution. And that's why I say that the Mormon Church shares some characteristics with those examples.
Is Mormonism secret or is it just sort of proprietary? I mean, I think people get how Apple might not want internal documents shared or Coca-Cola, but why would a church? Why would the LDS Church?
Well, that's a fair question. As everyone's pointed out, the LDS Church has a legal right to not disclose certain financial information, but it's actually most of its financial information. But as we've also heard, a lot of people still think the church should disclose that information. And I think that's where you see some of the comparisons with those earlier Pentagon-related whistleblower cases I mentioned, that Daniel Ellsberg thought the American people ought to know more about the history of America and Vietnam, even though the Defense Department probably was within its legal right to not disclose that. The NSA really had no legal obligation to disclose some of its surveillance tactics, and yet Edward Snowden thought that the American people ought to know that. And I think, mechanically speaking, that's the similarity between some of those famous whistleblower cases and what we're seeing with the LDS Church, that it's not so much about the law as much as about what people think people should know about the church.
another characteristic that you write about is that you have employees or insiders in these cases of whistleblowing incidents who are disillusioned with the institution.
Yeah. And
maybe naive is how you describe it in your op-ed piece.
Perhaps they think that the behavior will change. And history has shown that it doesn't really work that way. I mean, it wasn't the Pentagon Papers that ended American involvement in Vietnam. And Snowden has raised discussions about surveillance, but the NSA is still collecting data. So I think it is naive to assume that just because you leak something, the behavior that you don't like is going to change, at least for the big institutions. I will say that this might work a little differently on the local level. Hmm. I think
on a micro level.
Micro level, yeah. Local level. I think we actually just saw that, to use another Utah example, with the Unified Fire Authority. Someone I assume was disillusioned with what was going on there, disclosed some documents about expenses and payments that were going on at UFA, and it has now led to the chief resigning. There's been a state audit. There may be a criminal investigation. Now, UFA, of course, a vastly smaller agency than the LDS Church, but that's kind of my point. And I think I'm kind of wondering if we see some stuff released about, say, wards and stakes of the LDS Church, where if something hypothetically was amiss there, might that have a little more impact than trying to release, you know, the pay stubs, for example, of the general authorities?
This may be pushing you to make a sort of subjective comment, so you can push back on that if so. But I wondered if you don't think that, yes, Ellsberg didn't end the Vietnam War. Snowden didn't keep the NSA from collecting information, but that there has been some effort at transparency. We now know things we didn't know. So doesn't that incremental progress, that kind of forward momentum, matter a little?
Oh, I'm sure it matters a little, but it's pretty early yet. Maybe it will have an impact down the road. And I'm certainly not trying to discourage all whistleblowers everywhere from leaking. Again, I think you have to have a realistic view if you're going to be a leaker, that you could really expose yourself to some retaliation, perhaps some legal consequences for maybe not such great odds of changing institutional behavior.
Let me ask you finally about one very particular question, very particular consequence of all of this. Fred Karger, you write about him in your article, in your op-ed piece. He's a man who believes the LDS Church does not deserve tax-exempt status, and he's trying to get people to leak information to essentially help him make that case. Now, Ryan McKnight says he doesn't see the people who sent him internal documents necessarily as whistleblowers. Could that be an implication of these documents coming forward, that it could, in fact, challenge something as significant as the tax-exempt status of the LDS faith?
Oh, I suppose if you really got the right documents or the wrong documents, depending on your point of view, really pointed to something that a tax-exempt organization is not supposed to be doing, sure, it could have an impact. But, I mean, you're really shooting the moon there. I think I've read where it's actually – there's almost no case in the history of American tax-exempt status where a church loses its status. So it would really have to be earth-shattering documents that someone produce. I'd like to say one other thing, too, but more about the insiders you mentioned. It's not necessarily disillusionment that gets some of these folks to reveal something. It's kind of lack of adjudicating grievances or process for adjudicating those grievances. I mean, we've heard from Snowden that he made a complaint at least about what he thought was wrong with the NSA surveillance, and apparently that complaint didn't go anywhere. And that, as I've sat in investigative reporter workshops that talk about whistleblowers, that's a pretty common characteristic, that the aggrieved leaker doesn't feel like his or her complaint was taken seriously or he got the right due process. And that's kind of when they turn into a whistleblower or leaker. And I think that has implications for the LDS Church, because if you're a rank and file Mormon who doesn't think something is right with your church, where do you turn to make your complaint and have that complaint appropriately heard up a chain of command? I think that's a very difficult thing just by the nature of the huge LDS Church bureaucracy.
Are you expecting we'll see more of these leaks? I mean, this is the digital age.
Yes, I absolutely think there's going to be more of these leaks. The extent to the value, I guess, remains to be seen. And as I've warned, I think it takes a lot to change institutional behavior just by leaking documents. And I'm not rooting for any leakers. If it's going to happen, it's up to somebody else. But, I think because of the digital age and the ease of moving information, we will see more leaks.
Nate Carlisle is justice and safety reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. There's a link to his op-ed about whistleblowers on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take another quick break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are talking about the Mormon document leaks. More than anything, it seems like these documents that have been leaked over the last few months reveal the ordinary business of a big institution, a big bureaucracy. So today in the program, we are talking about the documents and what they reveal about the LDS Church. Rick Phillips is joining us now. He's a scholar of sociology of religion and associate professor at the University of North Florida. His work focuses on Mormonism. We should mention he is a former Mormon. And Rick Phillips, welcome to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Let me just start generally with you. What do you think about Ryan McKnight's efforts? How are you looking at these document leaks?
Well, you know, the church has always had critics. They have political critics. They have theological critics. And to me, one of the ways that critics have always attempted to attack the LDS Church is by revealing things or making things public that the church would rather keep secret. So in that sense, I don't think that what McKnight is doing is different in substance from what earlier critics have done. In the 1970s, Gerald and Sandra Tanner leaked the text of the temple ceremony,
right.
and there was much consternation. And I don't think that consternation is qualitatively different than the consternation we see today over what's going on now. The church has always been opaque, and one way to attack an opaque institution is to peel back the curtain.
But has the church always been opaque? Wasn't there a time when they were perfectly willing to reveal the particulars of their sort of inner workings?
I don't think so. I think there has always been a lot of privacy associated with the church. I know there have always it has always been the case that historians have been bothered by their inability to get certain documents that they want. Juanita Brooks famously told a story when she was researching her book on the Mountain Meadows Massacre that she couldn't obtain a document that was on the desk of a leader who was denying it to her. And so I think there have always been issues or stories of people who have been trying to extract information from the church. And for whatever reason, the church, probably because it has so many critics, the church is not particularly forthcoming sometimes.
It's hard to assess a person's motives, but let me ask you to give it a shot, I guess, in terms of Ryan McKnight. I mean, he says that he is kind of ambivalent about the effect of these document leaks, that he's just interested in the broader principle of transparency. What do you make of that?
You know, I can't see any reason other than to attack the church why you would release the personal pay stubs of Elder Henry B. Eyring. That seems a little bit gratuitous to me. There's nothing that reveals about the LDS Church that isn't essentially revealed by the general letter talking about the increase in salary. So, I don't know. It quacks like a duck.
What do the leaks so far, what do they reveal? Anything really significant, or just, as I said earlier, they just reveal the workings of a bureaucracy?
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, if the intent is to damage the church, then I think there are three ways that the church could be damaged by this. Number one, it stokes the fire that burns within critics. It's new fodder. Number two, I think there are some members of the church who have doubts and who have issues with the church, and things like this might add another straw to the camel's back. But to your point about a bureaucratic organization, I do think, particularly along the Wasatch Front, there are many Mormons who are embedded in their communities and embedded in Mormon culture who believe in the church and have allegiance to the church, but who have a fairly unexamined faith, who have a fairly naive faith. And if your contact with the church is solely through the institutional church, through Sunday school manuals, Relief Society manuals, and things like that, you may develop a mythologized view or a lionized view of the apostles and sort of see them as larger than life or venerate them beyond what might be realistic.
Right.
And so seeing them in their role as the administrators of a bureaucracy, or seeing them behave like you would expect corporate executives to behave, might be jarring, because they're used to thinking about the prophets, the apostles, solely as prophets, seers, and revelators.
Right. But how jarring? I guess. I mean, one of the things you've mentioned to us is that when you were young, you had an incredibly sort of romantic, idealized, mythologized sense of Mormon leader Spencer W. Kimball, for example, who was president
right.
of the church. So what does that mean exactly? I mean, you had a sense that this man and these men were actually having, not literal maybe, but in some way, these kind of mystical conversations with God.
Right. This notion that the veil was so thin between the Lord and his anointed that information transferred back and forth readily and easily. And I think that's, you know, you may say, some people may say that's a naive way to look at it, but I don't think that's an unusual way for Latter-day Saints of my generation to have learned about the prophets and the apostles. I remember a stake president telling me that he, bearing testimony to me that my mission call was inspired and that I was going where the Lord would have me go. And so that I shouldn't complain that I didn't get called to a foreign country.
Right.
And for someone who has this kind of view of the church, it could seem to someone that if the Lord could inspire a specific mission call, then perhaps the Lord would reveal information about, you know, social policy or these kinds of things, rather than having the apostles be briefed by experts using PowerPoint.
To that point, what effect does that image have, do you think, on the rank and file? Maybe not of your generation, but maybe a younger, more circumspect generation who's more willing to see sort of the realities, I guess, of a complicated institution. Because one of the things you've talked about is that this could be sort of eroding the prestige of the institution or of these leaders.
Well, you know, if I think about the apostles as prophets, seers, and revelators 100% of the time, and then I see them in their role as corporate administrators making decisions the way that any corporate administrator would make, or if I see the pay stubs, or if I look at a letter that talks about their compensation, a part of me might see them as salaried employees. And to the extent that I'm not seeing them 100% as prophets, seers, and revelators, there's a little bit of ground there where I might be able to, you know, there's a little soil where seeds of doubt could be sown, I think.
Hmm. So when you incrementally break down an idealized impression, it could cause some disaffection, I suppose.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you're a millennial and you're watching the videos that were leaked, you see men of their generation talking about things the way men of their generation would talk. They
right.
sound a lot more like your grandpa than they would sound, you know, like your perhaps naive version of what an apostle would sound like.
Are any of these documents making a discernible difference? The ex-Mormon Reddit community, for example, has made this list of instances where they say they forced the reaction of the LDS Church. Elder Todd Christofferson had to respond to the church's handbook policy on you know, same-sex marriage. They removed videos, including statements that were they thought were kind of embarrassing. So is it making a difference, these leaks, in that sense?
Well, I you know, they certainly prompt a response from the church, and the church is often quick to respond when they feel like they're being attacked. But I haven't seen any serious policy changes. I haven't seen any anything that would suggest that the church is changing direction substantially because of these leaks. And that's partly because what has been leaked is really not that salacious.
Are these revelations, are they helpful to the cause of transparency or even to the cause of reform? I mean, if you didn't have these kinds of releases or threats, would Latter-day Saint leaders just in the end keep this stuff to themselves? Or is it inevitable that this is going to come out?
Well, with respect to how what general authorities are paid, I really don't think it's anybody's business. Here, the interesting revelation is the fact that they're paid at all. I think there are many Mormons who believe that they are complete. That the church has a completely unpaid clergy. I know there have been many statements where leaders have acknowledged that the general authorities receive a modest stipend, but I think some Latter-day Saints might have some problems with the general authorities as salaried employees.
But I guess to the bigger question, does this help leaking these documents? And even for leaders, knowing that the documents could potentially be leaked, does that keep them on their toes? Does that make them reveal or discuss things that they might not have in the past?
I think we've seen the church try to get out in front of the narrative. Mm-hmm. So there were a series of gospel topics essays that were published that dealt with matters like Joseph Smith's polygamy and Joseph Smith's involvement in folk magic. And I think the reason why the church was forthcoming on those issues and sort of set the record straight is because they didn't want people to get this information from anti-Mormon websites, or they were squeamish about people learning about it from scholarly articles and books. And so they wanted to acknowledge these things and to put them on their own website and release them on their own terms. And so in that respect, I guess, yes, it could be a catalyst for more transparency from the church.
Is the church at all vulnerable to having its tax-exempt status challenged?
I can't imagine that it would be. I mean, that seems rather far-fetched to me.
So in that sense, Nate Carlisle's idea about whistleblowers, that they don't actually make that much difference in the bigger scheme of things, might be right in this case?
Well, you know, I think it depends on what's been leaked. When I think about a whistleblower, I think about someone who is revealing illegal activity or serious malfeasance, and we really haven't seen that. What we've seen here is an attempt to embarrass the church. I mean, really, what has happened is material has been released that is more embarrassing than anything else. I mean, I would be mortified if someone uploaded my pay stubs to the internet.
What are you expecting from these documents? Do you think they're just going to continue to be, you know, bureaucratic documents? What could be interesting or significant in a document release that would say something to the bigger disaffection of some Latter-day Saints related to their policy on gay people or their history? You know, stuff that hasn't already been picked through by historians and already revealed. Do you see anything there?
You know, I think the only things that could come out are, you know, recorded conversations that were surreptitiously recorded or leaked personal memos or things like that. I don't see a lot of malfeasance here. I don't see anything in the behavior of the apostles in those videos that are inconsistent with their public pronouncements. It's just a little more candid, a little more informal. I don't see most of the leaks that I see on the Mormon leaks site are pretty banal stuff. I mean, there's no big revelations here. The memo talking about the increase in pay is essentially all they've got.
So what are you expecting to come if you can even say.
Well, I think, you know, one thing that could happen are leaks from a more local level, things that happen at the stake level, something a stake president says, something a bishop does. I mean, those kinds of things could be very damaging to the church. And, you know, there are thousands of stakes. That's many, many opportunities for a stake president to be caught off guard, or a bishop to do something, make a mistake, and have it suddenly be broadcast to the world over the internet. So I think those kinds of things, having people upload links of documents and or recorded conversations from their local units, that could be a problem.
I did want to ask you, Rick, are all religions opaque about their internal operations?
Some more than others. With respect to financial disclosures, there are some denominations that are very forthcoming in terms of how they spend their money, and they outline it down to the penny. I think the LDS Church has a long history of persecution and critics, and so I think having their guard up is something that has been natural to them. And so I think it's not necessarily that they are hiding something as much as it is that the sort of institutional culture has been cultivated in a climate of persecution and a conflict.
It's Rick Phillips. He is Associate Professor of Sociology and Religious Studies at the University of North Florida, joined us from a studio in Jacksonville. Professor Phillips, thank you very much for taking the time.
Thanks.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. Our intern is David Boyle. Technical direction today from Michael Havey. The program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.